Deutsche Welle Africa Link.
And we meet again for another edition of Africa Link. I'm Crispin Mwakideo in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, South Sudan peace talks delayed yet again. Citizens caught up in the conflict are getting wary.
If the two sides discuss genuinely, then we can have peace. If they are not, then it's going to keep on dragging on and on and on.
We don't want war at all. We want our leaders to be matured enough to see we need peace.
And in Ghana, thousands of miners working for AngloGold Ashanti could lose their jobs.
Supposing 2,000 employees should be laid off, and each employee has a dependence of maybe 4, then multiply 2,000 by 4. You'll get a significant number who are going to suffer.
In behind the headlines, Zambians struggle to cope with the rising number of teenage pregnancies. All these stories and more lined up for you in the next 25 minutes. I'll be right back.
Top story.
It's a tough time to be in South Sudan. Peace talks seem to be going round in circles, and now health workers are warning that a cholera outbreak in the capital, Juba, could be getting worse. The disease has already killed almost 24 people. Hundreds others have been hospitalized. In a moment, we shall be hearing more on the stalled peace talks from our correspondent in Juba. But to start us off, Sophie Sabatier, emergency coordinator with humanitarian organization Médecins Sans Frontières, MSF, has been telling me more about the seriousness of the cholera outbreak.
Everybody is affected by cholera. The main factors for the spread of the disease is bad condition of hygiene and sanitation. So people in poor parts of the city are supposedly more affected than people in the richest part of the city. As well, there are two camps in Juba where internally displaced people live. Those camps are yet not affected, but could be very affected if the cholera spreads there. Those people have been vaccinated 3 months ago in the camps. So far, there are very, very few cases in the camps, but we are waiting. We don't know whether it's going to be affected or not.
And talking of these vaccines, but how effective are they in prevention?
It's something that is very hard to say for the moment. We don't know much about those vaccines, but for the moment, like I said, in the camps, we've had sporadic cases and not an outbreak.
What is being done to stop the disease from spreading?
There are few cases in other parts of the country, and MSF is very concerned about that, especially in a place called Ye, where it's in the south of the country, and there have been 12 suspected cases, and one was confirmed. MSF is sending a team of 3 people to do an assessment. If cholera spreads to other parts of the country, MSF is ready to intervene if it's needed. In other parts of the country where MSF has got some projects, the projects are getting ready if the cholera spreads there.
But it's not as if this particular outbreak now in Juba was unexpected. We knew from the conflict and the movement of people that such a disease, such an outbreak could occur. But why didn't the authorities and health workers do enough to prevent it?
Well, it's very difficult to prevent before. And what they did is in some places, like in the camps, the places the most likely where outbreak could happen, the people have been vaccinated.
And what advice would you give to those who are suffering from this outbreak?
As soon as people develop the symptoms, which is vomiting and watery diarrhea, is to seek medical care as soon as possible. Because the more you wait, the more likely the disease is going to be severe. Here in Juba, there are 4 places where people can go. 4 treatment centers, and MSF is planning to open another 2 other treatment centers.
MSF Emergency Coordinator in South Sudan, Sophie Sabatier. Peace talks to end South Sudan's nearly 6-month-old civil war have been delayed, mediators said on Wednesday. Instead, a 3-day multi-party symposium involving the government, the rebels, religious and civil society groups would open on Thursday at the African Union headquarters in Addis Ababa. South Sudan is still engulfed in a civil war which has claimed thousands and displaced over 1 million. Despite all that, DW's Benno Mushla says the people remain hopeful.
Well, the state of the country, it's I would say twofold. Juba and the capital, where I find myself right now at the moment, is safe, at least like in the daytime. There is still a curfew like imposed by the government. However, other parts, especially Unity State and Upper Nile, where the state capitals are, Bentiu, those are very unsafe places. The rebels are no longer in control, but they are not very far away from the places that are controlled by the government. There is still fighting going on. And today and yesterday, the government complained that the rebels have violated the ceasefire agreed on a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, I'd just like to again touch on that fact that the president, while addressing the National Assembly, accused the rebels of breaking the ceasefire. But how true are these allegations?
Over the weekend, I went to Bentiu, the state capital of Unity State in northern South Sudan. And yes, I think it's fair to say that there is still fighting ongoing. I mean, I myself heard like gunfire, shelling in the evening and also sometimes in the daytime. Of course, I can't say 100% that it was an attack by the rebels, but there was gunfire, there was shelling, and like the region, the city was rife with soldiers, so many soldiers of the government, they were patrolling the street, and yes, I can confirm there was gunfire, at least I heard it.
And how easy or difficult was it for you to travel around the country from Juba, let's say, to Bentiu?
What's happening right now in South Sudan is that the UN does some commercial flights with an agency, so it is possible to travel, but yeah, I mean, it's not so easy. Like, and definitely, like in Bentiu, the situation in Bentiu is like this, that there's no NGO left in Bentiu. Bentiu is a complete dead city, so everybody is more or less staying on the UNMIS compound there. Also, the IDPs are inside the compound. So Bentiu, the state capital, is very unsafe. There are many, many soldiers. Basically, civilians are no longer on the street. It's controlled by the soldiers.
Let's talk about the peace talks now, Benno. You've been there. What kind of impression do you get from the two warring parties? Are they really serious about really getting this thing resolved?
That's very, very hard to say from the outside. I remember like when we had the renewed ceasefire agreement in early May, I was talking to the opposition side, to the rebel side, and they told me hours before the agreement was reached that they did not want to sign anything, not anything in Addis. And afterwards, I did some interviews with some internationals and diplomats, and they said, like, this time it was the international pressure that made both sides sign an agreement, but it was not their own will. So it's very hard to say, you know, like, both sides say they want peace, they are willing to live up to peace. It's very hard to say, but, you know, like, I think one can only hope that they are really genuinely trying to make peace to this country.
And talking of hope, how much do you gauge amongst the South Sudanese? How much hope do they still have?
South Sudanese, you know, they are full of hope, but they've been through conflict many times. They've seen the first ceasefire agreement in January being violated. So they have hope, but they're very, very careful, you know. Like, most of them here, at least in Juba, they say, well, the situation is now better. It's much safer. However, we are still waiting.
We hope for the best. If the two sides because genuinely, then we can have peace. If they are not, then it's going to keep on dragging on and on and on.
Yeah, we're expecting a fruitful result because for us as South Sudanese, we feel war is not the right thing for us right now. We grew in war, our ancestors suffered in war, our fathers suffered in war, and we do not see any benefit in the war. We need peace.
Benno Mushla in Juba.
Africa Link, every weekday on Deutsche Welle.
Now let's talk billions. Germany's former federal president, Dr. Horst Köhler, said on Wednesday corruption is costing Africa at least $50 billion annually. Köhler made the remarks during the first ever East African German Business Colloquium, which has just ended in Nairobi. Germany's investment in Kenya stands at $1.4 billion. And as our correspondent James Shimanyula found out, German investors remain cautious about Kenya's security situation.
The one-day inaugural East Africa Germany Business Conference, officially opened by the former federal president of Germany, Horst Köhler, was attended by more than 400 foreign investors, nearly 40 of them from Germany. In a speech, Köhler a former head of the International Monetary Fund, told investors what sort of investments he would like to see in Africa. Investments that bring forward a country as a whole, he said. Investments that create jobs. Investments that move Africa up the ladder of value addition. Investments that bring infrastructure, education, health care, and prosperity to all in the nation. Dismissing an old dictum that what Africa needs is trade, not aid, Kula said the international trading system was still far from being development-friendly, and the job of creating a truly inclusive trade regime had not yet been completed. Michael Rook represented the Germany-based company Johannes A.K. Lies and Sons. He told me that security fears were troubling German investors who were already in Kenya and those who were planning to set up businesses in the country for the first time.
German investors are very much concerned about the security situation. For all those investors that live in Kenya, they have to accept it. Of course, it's not so easy anymore as it used to be, but I think it's a worldwide problem, not only a Kenyan problem. Terrorists are active worldwide.
Nonetheless, this did not, of course, diminish the threat they posed, as the Germany businessman went on to emphasize.
It's a permanent threat. If you are in public places, you have to be a little bit alert, but at the end of the day, you can't really protect yourself. You can be a victim of a terrorist attack anytime, anywhere in the world, not only in East Africa.
This German East African conference comes just after more than 400 British citizens left Kenya following their government's advisories on threats posed by terrorists, especially in the coastal resort city of Mombasa and in the capital Nairobi. Michael Rook believes the British citizens were acting prematurely when they decided to leave.
It can hit you anywhere, not only in East Africa, not only in Kenya. We have seen attacks in London, in Madrid. And I think it would be wrong to say don't travel to European cities anymore. You have to live with that.
Director of the Nairobi-based Tropical Farm Management Kenya, Jeremy Hume, agreed with Michael Rowe that the terrorist threat was real, but said trade and commerce had to continue nonetheless.
Everybody is concerned about it, but in our business, which is trading all parts of the coffee chain through from farming to export, we've been here 50 years as an investor here in the Kenyan coffee industry, and we are here to stay.
The Nairobi conference was also attended by Kenya's Foreign Affairs Minister Amina Mohamed, who assured investors that her government was currently strengthening security following frequent attacks by suspected Al-Shabaab supporters and sympathizers.
Security is something we're working on, and I think that right now we are in a much better place than we ever were.
That report was compiled by James Shimanyula in Nairobi.
Behind the headlines.
Children bearing children. Zambia is struggling to cope with an increasing number of teenage pregnancies. More and more schoolgirls from 10 to 15 years of age are reportedly becoming mothers. In the past 1 month alone, more than 500 schoolgirls have gone on maternity leave. Sex education remains a taboo topic in Zambia, and that's why our correspondent Kathy Sikombe had to go behind the headlines and uncover this story.
Sex education is still a taboo in the Zambian society. However, experts have warned that the time has come for Zambia to speak up about sexuality. Jani Conrad is a youth counselor at Youth Alive, a non-government organization dealing with youth reproductive health issues.
The numbers of young people who are getting HIV infections and STIs has increased amongst the lower group of young people. We talk of those that are maybe 15 and lower, and even the teenage pregnancies, we have high statistics amongst that group of young people. For those that are above 15, maybe 18, 19, we are a little bit safe, though we still have a lot more work to do.
12-year Mutinta Beani learnt the hard way as she is now 4 months pregnant. She has this warning to her age mates.
I'm so confused. No one told me what to do. So just happened. I'm so confused. My mommy is very upset at me and also my father. I'm very confused. Please listen to what your parents say. Do not do things without you knowing. If you don't know what it is, then don't do it at all.
Precious Daka is a teacher at Temwani School in the capital, Lusaka. She says parents and teachers need to work together to help young people learn about sexuality.
Children really need to be educated about sex matters. You know, they really need to take precautions. So I think there hasn't been much sex education in most schools, I should say. Okay, it has to start from home, but again, the teachers have to put in something, at least to help out. I think it's not too late. You can still educate them. Those who have gone on maternity, they can still come back to school and learn.
Boniface Chembe, a human rights activist, says the advocacy on gender equality has focused more on girls than boys. Chembe says there is need for a balance since boys also need help.
We have not fully understood, or we have somewhat misinterpreted what is meant by gender equality. In Zambia, we've understood it as making the girl child become more privileged as opposed to the boy child, because of the perception that the boy child has been preferred for a long period of time. So I think there is need to refocus our understanding of what is meant by gender equality to ensure that, yes, in as much as we try to propel the status of the girl child, we also ensure that the boy child is given a platform to allow him to also fulfill the objectives of his life project.
Chongo Mwila, a spokesperson at the Ministry of Education, acknowledges the problem and says the government is looking into the matter.
As a country, Zambia is well known for having some of the best policies. If you look at our adolescent strategic plan or our national health policy, we've got many ideas that for things that we want to do, but when you go on the ground, really, you find that there's a lot of gaps. And so now, using the evidence from our research, we're going to be advocating now for reform of policy, or at least addressing the policies that we have on the shelf and finding out why is it that there are such gaps between what we have written and what's actually happening.
The World Health Organization says teenage pregnancy in Zambia has adverse social consequences. Girls have sex earlier than the boys, and they are less likely to use condoms. It is estimated that 28% of young females aged 15 to 19 years have begun childbearing.
Kathy Sikombe with that report from Lusaka. You're listening to Africa Link, DW's English for Africa service from Bonn, Germany. Ghana is the second largest African gold producer after South Africa. But that hasn't stopped Ghana's AngloGold Ashanti from planning layoffs, which could see some 6,500 miners lose their jobs, a decision which has gotten many worried. Isaac Kalechi reports.
It is important that the correct information is given at this time to our communities.
It was at this town hall meeting in Obuasi that AngloGold Ashanti announced it was laying off over 6,000 mine workers. Senior Vice President Mark Mokombe said the layoffs were part of the company's cost-saving measures. The Obuasi mines were no longer productive and were degraded. Mokombe said the company was in contact with the government.
We have now developed a good working partnership with the government of Ghana, the Ghana Mine Workers Union, and other key stakeholders to address the challenges facing Obuasi mine.
Those challenges are numerous. Obuasi has been a gold mining area for many years. The mines brought development to the area and, most importantly, supplied young people with employment. Now there are fears that the loss of thousands of jobs will lead to an increase in the crime rate and plunge the entire town into economic crisis. Many of the 6,500 workers have yet to learn how they will be affected personally by the layoffs. Not everybody is worried, though. Samolin Kansa said he and his family are well provided for. He has worked for the company for almost 30 years.
So once that they are telling us some of us will be going home and then others will stay, we are all praying for the sustainability of the work. As for me, I've worked for 28 years plus, so I don't have problem. I have my house, my children are already in university, My lower children are in secondary school, and I have something down.
Others, such as Paul Efriye, are deeply concerned, not only about their own livelihoods, but also about the impact on the local economy.
What we are going to realize or experience in this economy is that our local businesses are going to be collapsed, the patronization of goods and services in the town are going to be reduced, and if you do basic arithmetic analysis, supposing 2,000 employees should be laid off, and each employee has a dependence of maybe 4, then multiply 2,000 by 4. You'll get a significant number who are going to suffer.
For the government of Ghana, the development is worrying, but it says there is very little it can do because multinational companies can't be forced to employ workers, especially when they face high production costs. The CEO of the Ghanaian government's Minerals Commission, Tony Obin, said his organization is trying to persuade companies to halt possible layoffs, but he's not very optimistic.
Gold is facing significant challenges in terms of cost. Unfortunately, those in gold are also seeing their price going down. So when cost is going up, price is going down. It is a challenge that we need to address.
AngloGold Ashanti has assured community leaders in Obuasi that it is setting up a new team that intends to identify new opportunities. But such vague promises fail to impress. Some believe that it is the company's own mining methods that have led to the depletion of gold in the area. Here is Nkonso Ahini of one of the community leaders in Obuasi sharing his concerns.
There will be a massive impact on our people because it is these jobs that help many families to survive. Business will surely slow down in Obuasi and this part of the country. But worrying is the lack of development here due to mining. They adopted bad methods of mining, destroying our environment. I think that is part of the reason why we have this crisis. But the officials failed to respond.
But mining companies say they are conscious of the degradation of the environment and have adopted the best available practices to safeguard the communities in which they operate. Alfred Baku is with the Goldfields Mining Company.
We have signed a bond with the government, and it's not because of the bond. It is because we believe that we need to reclaim the environment. And therefore, what we do is, in our mining plan, we incorporated rehabilitation into our mining plan.
For now, though, AngloGold Ashanti will go ahead with the layoffs, and it is the hope of mine workers in other companies that this will not be the start of a trend.
Isaac Kalechi in Accra.
Opinion.
For this week's opinion, let's return to the Zambian story about increasing numbers of teenage pregnancies. As we heard from one of the teachers, sex education in Zambia is almost non-existent.
Children really need to be educated about sex matters. You know, they really need to take precautions. So I think there hasn't been much sex education in most schools, I should say. Okay, it has to start from home, but again, the teachers have to put in something, at least to help out.
This appeal by the Zambian teacher brings us to this question. Should Zambian schools teach sex education as one way of dealing with teenage pregnancy? Send us your say either by text message on +491609575910, an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, or a letter to Africa Link DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. Now though, let's recap on our main stories. Aid workers say they are concerned about a cholera outbreak in South Sudan's capital Juba spreading further. Former German Federal President Horst Köhler has called on East African countries to create a conducive environment for investment. We've also been hearing about the laying off of thousands of miners at Ghana's AngloGold Ashanti. And there we come to the end of this edition of Africa Link. I'm Crispin Mwakideu. Bye for now.